Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NFL Front Office Show. I'm your host, Brian Hughes, along with my co-host, Norma Rittendez. We are momentarily going to jump into the show, but before we do, ladies and gentlemen, with heavy hearts, I think it's only right that we pay tribute to one of the greatest basketball players that ever lived. Kobe Bryant, unfortunately, was taken from us way too early, passing away in a helicopter crash yesterday with his beautiful daughter, and unfortunately seven other people also perished. So with that said, I just want to take a few moments to pay homage to one of the greatest.
In the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant from Lower Merion High School in Pennsylvania. Definitely in the top 10 players of all time. No question about it.
Best player in the game?
Oh, hands down. He's the best player in basketball, and I don't think it's even close. But he has some of the best skills that the NBA has ever seen in history.
Honestly, I look at Kobe Bryant as their guy that is the best, one of the best.
It's just that simple. There's nothing that Kobe Bryant can't do.
But what he did to the game of basketball was simply legendary.
Kobe Bryant is a worker, and he's made himself the best. I can guarantee you, if they have practice tomorrow, he's going to be the first guy there as well.
Kobe, I think, is one of the greatest competitors in the history of the game.
His performance was so awesome that you can't help but respect it.
Watch Kobe. Do his thing. It was just so much fun. I just watched him go to work.
I've got to take Kobe Bryant. I like Kobe Bryant even better. One time, one game, I'm taking Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant is the best player in the world.
Welcome to the Kobe Show.
Believe that it's 17-time NBA All-Star,
can ball. He's a formidable force. He may be the most formidable force in the history of this game.
Kobe Bryant, at the end of the day, will go down as the greatest basketball player that has ever lived.
You know, Kobe is the greatest Laker ever.
I said, of course, that's me. I don't play around. I'm not there to be your best friend. I am there to destroy you.
And Kobe Bryant was one of the greatest ever.
Legend, and salute to him. So without any further ado, Norm, I want to bring you in. I appreciate you joining me on this journey here on the NFL Free-for-All show. How are you doing tonight? And what's your thoughts on Kobe Bryant? Give me a Kobe Bryant memory. Give me a Kobe Bryant thought, if you will, that you'll always remember about him. I know you're an L.A. guy as well.
Yeah, no, listening just to the tribute there and all the things people had to say about him, I mean, it's spot on. I grew up at a time, you know, in the late 80s through the 90s, and when I really started watching sports on TV was, you know, right around the time Kobe came around. So I watched his entire career from start to finish. And as a Lakers fan, you know, it just when he was on the court, he was going to make it happen. He was going to make every single shot. And that's just every time the ball went up, you expected it to fall. And I don't think I've ever watched another player with that kind of confidence that he's going up for a shot, it's going to drop. I mean, LeBron's great, and there's a lot of great players in the league, but Kobe just had a different element. And, yeah, it's really unfortunate what's happened. Real sad. And, I think the biggest moment I remember was when he actually tore his Achilles, because that was just he was already on his downside, and it just was so sad to see him, you know, carry the team that far that year and go down. But he just was fighting all the way to the end. Great player.
And you know what? That's actually one of – I had three moments that I was going to bring up, but actually that's one of my favorite moments, believe it or not, Norm. He tears his Achilles, and if you remember, he got fouled on the play – and actually had to sink two free throws with a torn Achilles. He shuffled back onto the court and sank two free throws to tie the game up. Just kind of goes to show you the toughness and the grit that this guy had. Another one, obviously, you know, no question, scoring 60 points in his farewell game with a team that really honestly was not very good against the Utah Jazz team that was a playoff contender. You know, I think speaks volumes. And then I had a conversation with another one of the chefs earlier today, Timeless, who's going to be coming in here in a moment, about Michael Jordan and his farewell game and just the type of person that Kobe Bryant is. He dropped 55 points on Michael Jordan and the Washington Wizards, because he was like, hey, I'm not paying any homage to anybody. Every time I come out, you know, I'm here to mess you up. And that was just the type of player that he was. But without any further ado, Norm, let's go ahead and bring in. We do have a few guests here with us tonight. And let me start with one of the chefs in the building, the creator, if you will, the king chef of himself, Mr. TP Timeless. TP, how you doing tonight?
I would throw my slogan out there, but I know this is a very emotional situation in sports. I can't just say basketball or football, but I'm all right, man. I'm breathing and alive, just like the rest of us.
Timeless, give me, you know, obviously we mentioned a couple. Norm brought up the, you know, the torn Achilles, which I thought was a fantastic moment. You know, I mentioned, you know, a couple moments as well. Give me a, you know, and I know you were on the other end because you weren't a Lakers fan, but give me a favorite Kobe Bryant moment or most infamous, if you will, Kobe Bryant moment.
Okay, so first and foremost, sports people, everybody here knows me. I'm not a Laker fan. I'm not a Kobe fan. I didn't like Kobe. as a competitive nature player. I didn't like Kobe. But after, like, his last season and him breaking down, I didn't want to see him end like that, so I had a big heart for Kobe. And then seeing this madness happen, I turned into the biggest Kobe Bryant fan ever, and I knew I didn't like him. But me, I'm a brutal guy. I'm the type of guy that likes a crossover or an ill game-winning buzzer beater or you getting dunked on. And the only dunk on I can really think of is two. One is Ben Wallace in the exhibition game. This was preseason. And they were playing UNLV. He crossed up somebody at the top. I forget who it was, but they were playing the Wizards, and he dunked on Ben Wallace. Like, Ben Wallace was a practice player. It's really bad. And the other one was after tip-off in Orlando. He dunked on Dwight Howard, something terrible. And Dwight Howard is basically infamous for that Kobe dunk on him. Kobe put it so far in his face.
I remember that.
I had to give him credit.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that, Ty. Well, we do have a couple other callers in queue here. Let's go ahead and bring them in case they have, a favorite Kobe Bryant moment before we switch gears and talk some football here. Calling in from the 770, I believe this is Matt. Matt, how you doing tonight?
Hey, fellas. Yeah, it's Matty Ice. It's been a while. Brian, I think you remember me. I was on the Chef Show a while back. Yeah, man, it's just tragic. It's unfortunate. Actually, one of my favorite memories, believe it or not, is I think being broadcast on ESPN right now when it is the last game you guys were mentioning against Utah. They are rebroadcasting it, Kobe's farewell game. That was one of my favorite games to watch. I also enjoyed the 2002 Western Conference Finals against Sacramento Kings when it was just – it was a great, great series. Went seven games. Lakers pulled it out in Sacramento – and it was basically Kobe, and there was a little bit of a Shaq show, but it was all Kobe. I was never a huge Laker fan either, but I always had respect for Kobe Bryant, and he certainly made his mark on the world, and he will always be remembered.
Absolutely. And then last but definitely not least, I got a caller calling in from the 310. I believe this is Tom. Tom, how you doing tonight? Thank you for joining us on the NFL Free For All.
I'm doing all right, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, man. Do you have either a favorite or an infamous Kobe Bryant memory?
Yeah, so I'm 32 years old. I grew up in Los Angeles, and, I don't know how else to explain. Like, I didn't think someone I didn't know passing away could hit me this hard, but, it almost feels like my childhood died. Like, I don't even know how else to explain it besides that. Like, I come on this show a lot, and I love to chat with you guys. And, man, we spend so much time talking about contracts and is this guy better than this guy. And it's like, but, man, when you have, like, a childhood hero, like, man, when I was watching Kobe growing up, I wasn't thinking about how much money he was making or, like, whether he was taking the right shot or whether he was better than LeBron James or, I just loved watching him. And, I think just the guy, he existed at this magical moment, I think, in our lives where, Jordan existed in a time where, athletes were almost, too vague. He was, just too much of a legend, right? He was so untouchable, it was hard to believe he was even alive. And then nowadays, these guys can't go 5 minutes without tweeting their thoughts. And, Kobe existed in this weird in-between time where media was transitioning and, the internet was coming along, but Twitter and all that instantaneous stuff wasn't around yet. So we knew a lot about him, but not that much, enough to make him this unthinkable legend, but vulnerable enough that we saw him win three titles and then go through a legitimate super big down period with the trial and a few useless years on bad teams and then reinvent himself and win two more titles and go to three straight championships. I don't know. Because of the time period, because of who he was, you guys already said it. If you really want to sum Kobe Bryant up, he tore his Achilles and stood up and made two foul shots. Who does that? Who does that? Nobody does that. If I tore my Achilles, if a normal person, if not even normal person, if any person tears their Achilles, they just get helped off the court. They don't hobble over to the foul line in some random meaningless basketball game in the middle of the season and make two foul shots and then go off the court on their own power. Like, that doesn't happen. So, like, I'm crushed by it. His daughter being on there is crushing. Like, it's just – it sucks. It's too early. I don't know, guys. Like, I just – I it hit me legitimately super hard. Like, I was a really emotional day yesterday. It sucks.
I appreciate that, Tom. And, yeah, you know, it's funny because going back to that moment, you know, like, they had to foul the other team in order to get Kobe off the floor, because he literally couldn't even walk from the free throw line after he made the two free throws when he tore his Achilles. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And, you know, everybody here knows what a tireless worker that Kobe was. But, you know, he goes, you know, they were asking him about load management, you know, and obviously a guy that will play through a torn Achilles, you already know what his sentiments are on that. But he said, you know, listen, you know, every building I go to, there may be, you know, that kid in the stands that, you know, I'm their idol. I'm the one they're looking up to. And, you know, I don't ever want to take plays off, you know, when there potentially could be somebody in the stands looking at me, looking for me to be there. You know, I'm always there. So it's just another great story about Kobe. But we do have one more person to bring into the building, ladies and gentlemen, and that is my boy Nacho. Nacho, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the NFL free-for-all. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. Better than yesterday, and I'll probably be a little better tomorrow. But I'm doing okay.
Before we move on, man, do you have a favorite Kobe Bryant moment or something that you'd like to say about Kobe before we move on?
I honestly don't have a favorite Kobe Bryant moment. Being a Phoenix Suns fan, there aren't moments that I'm really, you know, happy that he's done, you know, taking it upon himself to knock us out of the playoffs multiple times is just not, you know, fun memories in mind. But it's just, I grow up a Suns fan, never winning a championship, watching this man just run over my team and every chance he got in the playoffs, and from a fan hatred to an admiration to an idolization of how can you not idolize a man who said he wanted to be like Michael Jordan and is pretty much a spitting image of him. And it was just awe-inspiring. And then after the hiccup in his life with what happened, and then, of course, like the gentleman before me said, with the internet, you get all of him opening up, becoming a husband again, becoming a family man. His whole Instagram over the past 3 years has been about him and his daughters and the love for them. And it's just been something that you go, okay, maybe not so much, you know, before, but now you can idolize him on and off the court. And then you read his book and you just hurt. You just hurt. It's something that hit a little differently than I've ever felt. And I think if you get a chance to listen to Tom Rialli explain that it's okay to cry over someone you don't know and show compassion, I think he hits it right on the head. Never even probably being in the same, other than in the same state playing my sons, I've never been to the Phoenix Suns. I've never been anywhere close to Kobe Bryant, but it hit me in a different way that I never thought it could. And then you couple that with the fact that eight other lives, including his daughter, who we could see was going to be another Kobe. It's heartbreaking. But, yeah, no good memories for me as a fan,
yeah.
But just my good Lord, just seeing the man that he turned out to be.
I appreciate that, Nacho. I'm gonna leave you guys with one last Kobe story that I dug up, and then we're gonna get into some football. So Jay Williams, which most of you guys know, was a high draft pick for the Buffalo Bulls. they were playing Kobe and Shaq, and this was several years ago, and it was a 7 p.m. game, and Jay Williams said he wanted to make sure he was ready for the game, so he got to the Staples Center at 3 o'clock to start shooting around. And when he stepped on the court, there was one person already on the court in a full-blown sweat, and that was Kobe Bryant. So he said, well, I knew I was, you know, I was going to do my normal routine. I wasn't going to leave the court until I made 400 shots. Well, after about an hour and a half, Jay Williams finished his workout and looked over, and Kobe Bryant is still, like, full-blown game moves, you know, going hard, and he's just thinking, wow. So he sat down on one of the chairs there courtside and proceeded to watch for the next 30 minutes while Kobe continued to work out and eventually just gave up and left. That night, Kobe Bryant scored 40 points against the Bulls, and Jay Williams had to ask him. He said, Kobe, he said, man, I watched you work out, and I thought to myself, why? And he said, I would have been done a long time ago, but I just wanted you to know, no matter how hard you work, I'm willing to work a little bit harder. So I think that pretty much sums up Kobe Bryant in a nutshell. But let's move forward, guys, to some NFL action. That's what the fans have come here to listen to. So I want to start off with, I believe, an interesting topic. This is something that Ty kind of teased a little bit. And Norm, as my co-host, I'm going to let you bat lead off on this. I want to talk about the 2004 NFL draft. And in particular, I want to talk about Eli Manning and his career. So Eli Manning has called it a career. He's hung up his cleats. And the question is, will he be a Hall of Famer, number one? And number two, does he deserve to be a Hall of Famer? So with that said, Norm, give me your thoughts on Eli Manning's career. Will he be a Hall of Famer, and if he deserves it?
Well, I think that's an easy yes. He will be a Hall of Famer. And I think that just goes with the fact that, you know, his stats will support it. But, you know, me as a football fan, and I've watched football for a long time, and I love it. Eli's never going to be one of the great quarterbacks that ever pops into my mind. Yeah, you know, hey, tell me some of the best quarterbacks. Eli's not going to pop in. He's forever going to be known as the guy that beat the Patriots twice, because that's all we really cared about with Eli. But as far as his career, I mean, he did everything he was supposed to do. He won some big games. And, yeah, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But I personally don't put him in that top tier of quarterbacks that are already Hall of Famers.
Interesting. I appreciate the take. Let me go over to TP Timeless. Ty, I think I already know how you feel after our conversation on Sunday, but tell me what your feelings are. Do you agree with Norm? Is he going to be a Hall of Famer, and does he deserve to be a Hall of Famer?
Just like Norm said, is he going to be one? That's an easy yes. I agree with him, and the reason why it's an easy yes is because of the name that's going to be on the – well, that's on his back in his jersey. The funny part is if he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think that he deserves to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. People may come up here and dispute that or have stats that back him. There was something that Brian brought to the kitchen yesterday, and I ate it, consumed it, and it's like it stuck in my rib. And it was at any point in time in Eli's career, whether he was at the height of his career, when was he a dominant figure at the quarterback position, or let's just say a top five talent at the quarterback position? I sat there and tried to rack my brain, even in both of the Super Bowl runs, and I couldn't even put him in top five when they won the Super Bowl. So it's tough for me to go like that. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, absolutely.
I really think Eli, to me, I don't think Eli is worthy of it, because I can at least name three right now that are not in the Hall of Fame that I think that are better quarterbacks than Eli.
All right. I appreciate that hot take. Thank you, Ty. I'm going to go over now to Mr. Matty Ice. I've got two people that both say yes, he'll be in, but both agree no, he doesn't deserve it. Matty Ice, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely think he'll be in. I mean, you beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl. They could have had seven Super Bowls if it wasn't for Eli. I think he'll get in. I wasn't impressed with the latter stages of his career. But, you know, sometimes players decline. It's not like he was really a dominant force, but I think they will vote him in. Probably the best memory for me was when he did that, the throw to, I think it was David Tyree, and it was just one of the greatest catches I've seen in the Super Bowl. And I got to give him credit for that throw when I think most people was thinking he was going to get sacked. So I'll give him that one throw. But overall, his career, I think he was just a little bit above average.
All right, I appreciate that. Nacho, I'm going to come over to you. So here's what I've gotten so far. I've gotten just above average. I've gotten yes, he'll get in based on his name. But everybody's pretty much universally saying, look, I don't think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. What's your thoughts? I kind of know how you feel on this, but I'm looking for the reasoning behind it.
I can't feel the same way I felt over 24 hours ago when I called in on Sunday, not only listening to you, but also taking the time myself to look at some of the things that he did throughout his career or didn't do. Not only did he lead the league in interceptions multiple times, but even in one of the years he won the Super Bowl, I believe he led the league in interceptions as well that year. So not even on the year he did the greatest thing you could do as a football player in a single year did he even shine in that year. It's just really bad. So looking back again, I tried to, you know, convince myself, like I said Sunday morning, I thought he deserved it. I looked at the two Super Bowl MVPs. I looked at the fact that who he beat when he beat them, beating Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. I tried to talk myself into it. But with you and your info, along with, you know, doing some more research, he doesn't deserve it. You say, you know, slightly above mediocre. 117 and 117 is mediocre. If he's not able to come in at the end of the year because of Daniel Jones, he retires with a subpar 500 record. I think it would be, what, 116 and 116, I think it was, or something like that. So it's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I get it. He's going to get in because of, like what Ty said, or sorry, like what he said. I'm still chipping right now, sorry. I'm paying pardon. Like what Ty said, you know, the last name on the back, the fact that he does have the hardware, and that's all it gets to go. And then, like I said on Sunday, you know, it's not a good factor, but the fact that we're using it, that he's a nice guy, it's going to get him in. And it's kind of blasphemous that he's going to get in just because he's a nice guy and just because his brother was that good at football.
I appreciate that, Tig, Nacho. Yeah, just for the fans listening in, Eli Manning career 117 quarterback, 60.3 completion percentage, is in the top seven all time in yards and touchdowns as well as interceptions. But you have to also take in the fact that he has the third longest active start streak at over 200 games. That definitely plays in. Now, here's a question that I think is actually much more interesting and we could have a little bit of a debate on. And, Norm, I'm going to come back to you and throw your feet right to the fire, buddy. 2004 NFL draft saw the Chargers actually draft Eli Manning and then obviously eventually trade him to the New York Giants. Phillip Rivers was in that draft class, and he eventually went to San Diego. And then there was this other guy named Ben Roethlisberger who ended up in Pittsburgh. So the real question is, who was the best quarterback from that draft class, in your opinion, and do any of them deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to think all three of those guys will be in the Hall of Fame. Big Ben's got two rings as well to go along with Eli, and Phil has none. But if I had to pick between all three of those quarterbacks, I would go with Phillip Rivers. As much as I hate the Chargers and I never liked Phil, you know, their numbers stat-wise, all three guys are very, very, very similar. And Phillip Rivers, to me, is just a better quarterback, and then just unfortunately played for the Chargers, who, you know, I'm not going to say he didn't have supporting cast. I don't want to make excuses for him. But it just didn't happen for some reason for the Chargers and Phil Rivers. But I just think
If I had to pick between those three, Phillip Rivers is the better quarterback, but I do think all three of them find their way in Canton.
Good point, good point. And let's not also forget that Phillip Rivers did make it to two AFC championship games, and in one of them, like you said, we're not making excuses for him, but one of them, I do believe there was a kicker named Nate Kading that missed four or five kicks. So with that said, let me shoot this on over to Ty, because I think this is a really, really good debate, much better than the Hall of Fame debate. Ty, 2004, you have the first pick. Knowing what you know now, who are you taking with that number one pick, and are any of these guys a Hall of Famer in your opinion?
That's a very interesting question, because I wouldn't want to change how history went. To me, Eli's the worst out of the three. I'm sorry. I mean, if anybody out there is listening and y'all in the New York area, I would love to cook for you. Second, to me, I'm taking Benjamin Roethlisberger hands down, flat out, because that's my type of football. I'm being personal. This isn't what people are drawing up X's and O's. My type of football is, if a quarterback don't see nothing, if none of those receivers are open, I'm not the type of quarterback like the quarterback that'll throw it out of bounds, throw it to the marker, and settle for another play. No, I like the quarterback that can tuck it, can shrug off a defensive tackle, get off of me, and pick up about 7 yards or pick up 12 yards, run out of bounds. He don't even slide. Like, Ben would rarely slide. You got to think, Ben is 6'5", like 260, and has good football IQ. That's a football I love, and a lot of people pick on me because my favorite quarterback of all time was Randall Cunningham, but I love that Randall used to take off and pick up yards. Like, I like to keep the game going. So if Ben could do that, and Ben was in that era where it was the pocket passer or a bust, and he ended up getting two championships himself, and I think, like, he did more with less because he didn't have the big-time receivers like Eli had. He had to work with Hines Ward and them and still ended up doing his thing and getting his championships too. So I'm going with Benjamin, hands down, flat out.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, another thing that's often overlooked, everybody talks about the Tyree catch, but before the Tyree catch, there was the Santonio Holmes catch. So something to keep in mind, which is still, in my opinion, the best throw in Super Bowl history, because I kind of feel like the Tyree catch was more luck than skill. The Santonio catch on the sideline versus the Cardinals, to me, is still the greatest Super Bowl catch. And because of the clutchness in the moment, it just meant so much. But, Matty Ice, I want to come over to you. I'm kind of shocked. So pretty much everybody's opinion right now is Eli would be last. 2004 draft, Eli, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger. You got the number one pick. Who you taking? Why? And are any of these guys a Hall of Famer in your opinion?
Out of those three quarterbacks, that is tough. Let's see, I guess Big Ben and Eli both had two Super Bowls each. Phillip Rivers, not able to get there. He'll probably never get there. Let's be honest, guys. It's the counterfeit Chargers.
Yeah.
They never, ever come to play when they need to. We will never see a Chargers Super Bowl ever. You can mark that. That's a lock. It's, you know, it's like death and taxes. So, but Phillip Rivers, incredible talent, unbelievable throws, the will to win. He's great. I mean, he's got 9 kids, so he's got to be trying to cash those checks. But I guess I'm going to go with Ty Thicke and Ben Roethlisberger here. He did prove to me a lot. I loved him at Miami of Ohio, small school up in Ohio in Oxford, where he shined there. He was kind of under the radar. He was drafted 11th. And I would pick him out of the three. I'd go with Big Ben. Big Ben's still curtain. Even though I can't stand him, he was great.
I appreciate that, Matty Ice. Yeah, you know what? Nacho, I'm going to come to you, man. This is almost universal across the board. Now, obviously, Norm is saying, hey, Phillip Rivers, we've got two votes now for Big Ben. What's your thoughts on this? Who are you taking with the number one overall pick, and why? And then are any of these guys Hall of Fame worthy?
The number one overall pick, I'm going to go with Phillip Rivers. I think a lot of the allure that Ben Roethlisberger got is the fact that he had all the talent around him as well. Again, I understand he's back there taking big hits, but you're always injured, and I just can't do it. So I also have to take into account where he went in that organization. knows how to draft and knows how to draft well and makes big moves. So I'm also going to – I just like the way Phillip Rivers played, what he did. Did he play a whole game on the torn ACL? Or he did something ridiculous. I can't knock that man for what he did. That team, again, I think Norm said, I can't knock him because he didn't have talent, because he did have the talent. That 14-2 team with Damian Thomas and Sean Merriman, it was stacked. I get it. But after that, they just withered away and couldn't get anyone around him. I'm going for Phillip Rivers. And I would say, yeah, there's only two worthy of the Hall of Fame, and that would be Big Ben and Phillip Rivers.
See, here's what I find interesting, guys. So Eli Manning, like we've all said, is probably getting into the Hall of Fame without question. But when you look at the numbers, so Eli Manning has 23 starts more than Phillip Rivers, yet Rivers has more passing yards. Eli has the two Super Bowls and the two Super Bowl MVPs, but so does Big Ben. Big Ben has two Super Bowls. He doesn't have the MVPs, but he actually made it there three times. And one of them, the one that he did lose, obviously went down to the wire. Big Ben has actually been much better in the playoffs. And I feel like Phillip Rivers, unfortunately, has kind of been victimized by his team. I mean, let's not forget the first time he went there, the Chargers were 14-2 under Schottenheimer and literally Schottenheimed themselves in the foot when they got to the playoffs. It is an interesting debate. I think you can make a case for any of these guys, but I'm actually going to go with Ty and Matty Ice. I think when you look at the complete package, you've got to go with Big Ben. His coolness under pressure, the fact that he extends plays, the fact that he throws probably one of the prettiest deep balls in the league. Phillip obviously has the unorthodox throwing motion and he can get it out there, but not like Big Ben. And I think we would all agree that Eli Manning is the worst of the bunch. So my feeling is, and Norm, I'm going to hit you up on this before we move on to the next topic because we're down on time, but my feeling is if you let Eli in, both these guys got to get in, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like I said, it's when you look at the quarterbacks that have made it into the Hall of Fame, I think these three guys are above a couple that I can think of, all three of them definitely going to make it. I think Phillip Rivers basically equals the same thing Dan Fouts was. Fouts was a little tougher of a player, I think, but, they equal that. And then I think Big Ben and Eli, just off the Super Bowl rings alone, is what puts them in there. So.
All right, good stuff, guys. We have about 20 minutes left in the show, and I think we would be doing an injustice if we didn't get to Super Bowl 54. As many of you here in the kitchen know, listening, as well as the chefs, I am a huge 49er fan. Been a Niner fan my whole life, and most of you don't know, but you were about to know, Norm, my co-host, is actually a diehard Chiefs fan. So without any further ado, let's just start with this, and then I'm going to get the other chefs cooking here. Norm, what is your biggest fear heading into this game as a Chiefs fan? What is your biggest fear about this matchup?
Well, the biggest one is I the Chiefs defensively, everybody's gotten on their case about not being able to stop the run. And yeah, statistically it's not great. And yes, we weren't that great early in the year. But if you get rid of weeks like 1 through 5, the run defense got way better, way better. And I think they've made the right adjustment. But so obviously we have to stop the run, but even more deep into that, it's setting the edge. I really can't think of a game in which teams really tested the outside edges against Kansas City running the ball. A lot of because they were getting so much up the middle early on, and the Chiefs find their way to lead so often that I think a lot of teams, and it comes down to personnel. I'm not so sure our edges have been tested yet, so I'm really concerned that if the zone blocking scheme and the getting the edge is efficient for Frisco, it could spell trouble for Casey's defense.
Well, good, bad, or indifferent, Norm, I can promise you this. You're going to get the answer to your question, because I guarantee you the Niners are going to test the edge. As a Niners fan, my biggest concern is obvious. It doesn't matter if you take wide receiver one and Tyreek Hill, or you take Nicole Hardman, or you take Travis Kelce. There is speed, and there is speed for days. And you got Patrick Mahomes back there that can extend plays and throw the length of the field. So my concern is the pass rush getting home. You cannot allow these wide receivers 4, 5, 6 seconds to break free. So with that, I'm going to turn this over now to Ty. Ty, what do you think is, if not the biggest, give me one key factor in this game that you think is going to determine who the winner is?
It's one word, and that's what they say wins championships, the defense. San Francisco's defense has been known all season long, and they've been stout. I think the Chiefs' defense has turned it around and started picking up their additions and getting T-Suggs and having somebody up front motivate that front line and Honey Badger in the back end and pumping those boys up to come up with some turnovers too. So it's been big on their side of the ball that they've actually been having defense, because it was always all offense with Kansas City. Now that they have both sides of the ball, and you guys have both sides of the ball, this is going to be one of the hell of a game. Now, I can't wait. I'm getting my popcorn ready, but whoever defense – I'm going to say this. Whoever defense gets the most turnovers wins the game.
I like that. I think that's a really good analysis. Maddie, I'm coming over to you. Ty says defense. What do you think the biggest key or one of the biggest keys in this matchup? What's going to determine who wins?
Well, it's going to be if Kansas City decides to do what they've done the last two games and fall behind, when San Francisco gets a lead on one, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, all year long when they get a lead on someone, they go for the throat, with the exception of the Seattle game in Seattle, but they still won the game with the stop at the half-yard line. Kansas City cannot afford another 14-0 deficit. So the biggest key, if Kansas City wants to win, is to actually make sure they do not get down 2 touchdowns. Now, I do think they will get down initially. I think it'll be 7-0 right off the rip, San Francisco. But I think Kansas City has to answer back, and I think it'll be a close game. I even like a prop of overtime at 8.5-1, guys.
All right, yeah, and all those points, Matt, were right on target. Yeah, San Francisco has actually been very, very good with a lead this year. Nacho, I'm going to come over to you. I know you saw the Niners firsthand twice, but KC is a whole nother animal. What do you think is going to be the main focal point of both teams? And what do you see determining the outcome of this game?
Now, I think the main focal point for each team is quarterback. It comes down to both of them, plain and simple. I think we're going to see the best we've ever seen of Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs shot themselves in the foot the last two games in a row. I predict they're going to do that again. I do not. So I don't expect them, of course, I said that last week. I don't expect them to go down 14-21-0 again. But, of course, this is a quarterback and a team that can definitely come back from that against anyone. And we've said that all year. That means anyone. It doesn't mean now all of a sudden we're in the Super Bowl. It means the team that they're playing against. It means anyone. So they can come back. To me, it's if Jimmy G can run a smooth one-minute offense to win a game, because you're going to have to use the whole minute. If you leave any time on the board, Patrick Mahomes is going to take a gap to win the game. It's all up to Jimmy G. I think it's up to the quarterback, and it falls heavily on what Jimmy G does. Again, you can run the ball all game, but it's going to come down to his arm and having to make passes and get big chunks of yardage to get down into scoring position if you guys keep it that close. So, yeah, it – again, to me, Patrick Mahomes he negates all defenses. So it doesn't matter who you have, where you have him, when you have him. He takes care of that. And then, of course, you couple that with the fact of who they have offensively, and the three names that you mentioned, that'll kill you in any which direction you want. They'll still run back behind the line of scrimmage 4 yards, go across the field, and then get you for another 40. That's how good and fast they are as a team. So, yeah, it really falls to me on Jimmy G and what he can do as a quarterback.
Yeah, and I've been saying this, Nacho, myself, that, you know, everybody, including Niner fans, that think that the Niners are going to go in and run for 350 yards, it's unrealistic. It's unrealistic to think that Jimmy G is going to pass for six passes again. But at the same time, I said that the previous game when he only passed 14 times, I said it's unrealistic to think in the championship game that he was going to pass fewer than 14 times. So, you brought up some really key points. We do have another caller in queue, so I want to go ahead and bring this caller in. Caller calling in from the 816. How you doing tonight? Thanks for joining us here on the NFL Free For All Show.
Hello.
How you doing?
Great. Hey, James Russell here, CEO of Gorilla Munch Cereals Limited, LLC. You keep talking about the 49ers and how they're going to run and their defense. And, man, Patrick Mahomes, he's going to do over 9,000. I mean,
All right. So I think we got ourselves a bit of a prank caller. That's all right. You know what? Maybe throws for 9,000. I think if he throws for 9,000, Norm, we get a W, right?
Yeah, actually, I think that sounded like Sam. Is he sick?
Yeah, it might have been Sam. Let's go ahead and move to the next topic, which is Jimmy G. Here's a couple interesting facts that I pulled up, guys, and I just want to throw this out here to you guys. Once again, I'm a Niner fan. I know I'm biased, but I do believe facts speak for themselves. Norm, do you know who has the highest QBR passer rating this year when trailing?
No, but I could probably take a good guess at it.
I bet you can, buddy. It's Jimmy Garoppolo, 116.4, 11 touchdowns, 1 interception when trailing. Now, granted, it's a small sample size, but he has been money when they've needed him, you know. And I think it's important, you know. Like, I feel like I'm a Jimmy G apologist, guys. Like, everybody talks about the defense, the coach, the running game. Like, did nobody watch the Saints game when he threw for, you know, 300 yards and 4 touchdowns? Did nobody watch, you know, the Rams game where we had back-to-back 3rd and 16 and Jimmy G picked him up? I mean, I'm not saying that he's on the same level as a Patrick Mahomes or an Aaron Rodgers, but I definitely think that Jimmy G has proven that he deserves to be here, and I think that he's also proven that Bill Belichick probably made the right decision of wanting to keep him and let Brady go a couple of years ago. Now, granted, I understand they got one more championship out of it, but I think the Patriots are going to be in a bad way if Tom Brady doesn't come back. But let me come over to you, Norm. So the Super Bowl here, we have Kansas City, we have San Francisco. We're not going to be on the air again before then, so I think me and you will do it. I don't know if the other guys want. Give me a prediction. Give me who you think is going to win this game, and give me the reason why. You can even throw out a specific person, a specific stat if you want. But give me the prediction on the game.
You know, it's really hard for me to give a score on it. You know, because I haven't put that much thought into it, because I think it's just going to be such a good, equal game. I do agree with the fact that I think 49ers are going to come out and get the lead early. But I think it's going to be more high scoring than people think. I think this thing is going to get, you know, into the 30s and high 20s. And, of course, I got KC coming out a winner by 4.
All right, Timeless, I'm going to come over to you. Norm says high-scoring game, 30s. He says KC wins by 4. What's your thoughts? I know you still got some other shows, but you can at least tell me which way you're leaning.
I don't have an answer. So that you guys have to come and get your dish. But here goes the interesting thing about this. if it's high scoring like that, I find it hard for San Francisco to win a game again like that. They went to New Orleans, and it was a reluctant situation, and Jimmy G just outshot Drew Brees. That's the one thing I can think about it. If this offense gets going and their legs are underneath them and they are full speed ahead, like, and I'm talking about Hardman, Hill, Kelsey at the tight end position, like, you know all the notables. Even Sammy Watkins, his name gets lost in transition in this. I find it hard for San Francisco to go shot for shot with them and win the Super Bowl. So I think San Francisco is going to want to keep this game under 27. I know it's going to be tough. But if they can keep this under 27, I think they have a shot. But if this gets into the 30s, like Norm hit on, I think he's going to be successful bringing that back to Missouri, a.k.a. the Show Me State.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Matt, I'm going to come over to you. San Francisco, Kansas City, give me your thoughts on how this game's going to play out. A prediction, if you want. And then do you see it as a higher or a lower scoring game?
Well, you're probably going to be salivating because if I go Kansas City, that means everyone's on Kansas City. So that's probably a good thing if you're a Niners fan, if everyone's on Kansas City, right?
Absolutely,
but,
Matt.
I think it's going to be tough. You have to, for me, as far as, you know, I'm a gambler. I've already stated a prop bet I like. I am waiting to kind of see where the money is. The early indication is there's more money on Kansas City, guys. But I really see it being a tight game. I have a crazy inclination, like I already mentioned, overtime, and I have Patrick Mahomes ultimately taking the prize, 33-27, a touchdown in overtime, kind of like what the Patriots did to the Falcons a few years back, my brutal Falcons.
All right, boys. I obviously am going to go for San Francisco, but I'm going to give you guys a couple stats because you know that's my thing. I'm going to give you guys a couple stats to salivate on here. So in the last 30 years, there has been 20 times that a top five offense has faced off against a top five defense. In those matchups, the defense is 15-5. So defense really does win championships. Also, if you look at two of the worst games that Patrick Mahomes had this year, not including the game where he hurt himself, they were both against the Chargers. Who's the Chargers' defensive coordinator? Gus Bradley. He runs the exact same type of defense that the San Francisco 49ers run. Look, I'm not saying that these are the reason we're going to win. I'm just telling you guys it's something to think about. And when you have four pass rushers that can get after the quarterback and you're able to drop seven in coverage, it can definitely make a big difference. I'm going with San Francisco in this one, and I'm not going to play it cheeky here, Norm. I'm going to say San Francisco wins this one 31-17. Your thoughts?
Yowch.
Wow.
Yeah, 31-17. Jimmy G String doesn't have that kind of stuff in his wardrobe, man. I don't see that happening. You know, because
I'm going to be honest with you, Norm. I'm gonna be honest with you, dude. See, you're worried about Jimmy G String. I'm afraid that Patrick Mahomes might not even show up because he's gonna be with Aaron Rodgers making commercials.
What I love is how Brian says that the Chiefs had their worst games against the Chargers. Well, if you call scoring 24 points and 31 points bad, I don't know.
What was his
stat? I kindly disagree with that. I tell you this, anyone that can hold Kansas City under 24 points does a good job. Their offense scores so quickly and in so many ways, and it's very hard to sustain a strong defensive stance against them. So holding Kansas City to 17, the only way that the 49ers can be successful in doing that is ball control, and they'd just be running the ball all over the place. Going back to my original point, that's the one fear. There's also another fear I have. Kansas City actually has a lot of depth at every position this year. They can sustain a couple injuries and they can rotate nice, but one position, running back. LeSean McCoy, you know, they benched him because he fumbled too much. That's the truth behind that. And all they have is one running back. So if something happens to Damian Williams, they got to go with that rookie, Darwin Thompson, and I'm not confident in that and the way he can pick up blitzes. So keep your eyes on that too. The running back position is very thin for Kansas City, and I'm a bit nervous about it.
All right, good stuff, good stuff. Hey, Ty, I'm going to come back over to you. We're going to be closing up here pretty quick. Give me final thoughts on the show. I appreciate you letting me, Norm, host here inside the Sports City Chef's Kitchen. Give me a final thought on the show or the Super Bowl. What you thinking about?
Awesome stuff. Norm, I'm glad you're a part of the team, and this is excellent fire for the kitchen because we actually have a real fire going into the Super Bowl, one Chief and one Niner. This is amazing. I'm gonna keep it honest, and not because Brian is my brother. I'm going to just keep it honest. I want to see if the Niners defense can slow that offense down. If they can figure that out, that coach Rob Saleh, he will be a head coach somewhere, unless San Francisco gives him a boatload of money. And Kyle Shanahan, he deserves Coach of the Year. That's it. That's the only thing. I don't know any other defense that can slow Kansas City down. This is the only team that I feel has the opportunity to do so. If not, it's going to be a landmine game for Andy Reid to get his first championship. But excellent stuff. Hopefully you'll get my answer by Sunday. Hopefully I can get both of you back in the kitchen Sunday.
All right. Hey, Matt, as a guy that's big on prop bets, I'm going to give you one right now. Over-under is 3 on the number of times that the TV cameras cut to Robert Saleh freaking out and all jazzed up on the sidelines, pumped up. So keep that in mind as well. Give me a final thought, a close out here before we wrap up.
Yeah, guys, I'll just keep it to what I know, and that is the numbers, and I'll give out a couple more props that I think might be worth, who knows. These are kind of crazy, but what the hell. Power outage, 50-1. Bud Light, first commercial, -125. Kansas City wins in overtime, 14-1, and I think that's it, but I think it's going to be fun. Thank you for getting me back in here. Ty, thank you very much. It was a good talk we had yesterday, and I hope to be on future shows. Thanks again, guys. Have a great night.
Hey, thanks, man. We always appreciate you stopping by the kitchen. Norm, it's just me and you, buddy. I'm going to go ahead and kick this over to you, man. You are now officially broke in as a Sports City Chef's host. Tell me about your thoughts on your first podcast, and tell me how you're going to feel after the 49ers beat down the Chiefs.
Yeah, it was good. It's good getting other people's input. It seems like we all kind of agreed on most of the topics that went about, with the exception of the Chiefs 49ers game, which should be a very good game. And I'll tell you this right now, for those of you that like to place bets. I mean, within the first 5-10 minutes of that game, I'll know exactly how the rest of it's going to go. The Chiefs make great adjustments, and my pops and I have actually done pretty well betting on the Chiefs and betting on the fact that they make good halftime adjustments and winning second half bets. So, like I said, I got to see how they stop the edge rush. I got to see the personnel groupings they have on offense, and that'll really kind of help determine how that game's going to go.
Give me your thoughts. Over under 175 yards rushing for the 49ers. Obviously, they could rush for 175, and you guys could still blow them out. But what's your thoughts? Over under 175 yards rushing for the Niners.
Well, I'm going to say under. I mean, that's way too many rushing yards. And I get it. They have to probably set – I don't even know what the line's at. But they have to set it high based on what they've been doing lately. But I'm going under.
All right, guys. Well, that's all of us. That's all for here in the Sports City Chef's Kitchen. Appreciate TP Timeless coming on with us. Matty Ice coming on with us. My boy Norm, who will be back here in the kitchen next Monday. We will have another broadcast, same bat channel, same bat time. From all of us here at the Sports City Chef Studios, we wish you God bless and keep Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gia, and the other passengers in your prayers. Good night.